is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one, only, and official UK Seahawkers podcast. The 2019 league season is just under a week old, and free agency has already died a quiet death after a hectic, to put it mildly, opening salvo in the early part of last week. So we'll go through all Seahawks free agency stuff, Seahawks-related free agency stuff, on this episode with myself, Stuart Court, and as always, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm ever so well, thank you. Good to be back chatting nonsense, as only we do too well.
Yeah, as is pretty much detailed in the new intro, as well as everyone.
Yes, I'm looking forward to I'm looking forward to listening to this. May have to actually download the podcast one of these times. Well, rate and review as well, of course. Please rate and review.
Yeah, and get involved as we keep saying. So yeah, a lot of the early action from Seahawks land was going out the exit door. So we could quickly go on for a few of them. There's a couple of big headliners. I think the first one to officially leave, Adam, was Justin Coleman, who left somewhat unsurprisingly. The fact he left was unsurprising. Destination, possibly a bit. He joined the Detroit Lions on a four-year, $36 million deal, $9 million per year as well, which, according to people who know more about it than you and I, should net a third or fourth round compensatory pick in 2020. Coleman's departure was almost white smoked a little bit by the team re-signing exclusive right free agent Akeem King on a one-year, $2 million deal. But it's for what, for his second time round and what they gave up in the trade with the Patriots a couple of years ago, it's a shame to see Coleman leave, because he's one of the better players, as he's been paid, at that nickel position, which is becoming ever more popular and important in the NFL in 2019, Adam.
Yeah, I think what we've done is we've played the free agent in this deal. This is how free agency is supposed to be played.
Yeah.
You get a guy for less, you maximize their ability, you use that for a couple of years, and then you get rid of them and hopefully get more compensatory picks back than you end up spending in the first place. So, you know, if you look at how the Patriots dealt with Trent Brown, they got him for basically nothing. They won a Super Bowl with him, and they've given him away and will get a good compensatory pick back in response. So I think it's a shame to lose Justin Coleman, but he's a nickel corner, and that's not necessarily going to dictate you winning or losing a Super Bowl or even being at that level based on the quality of your nickel corner. Not that it's not a very important and good position to have, but I think we played this in exactly the right way, and you say shame to lose the guy, but yeah, this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, definitely, especially as we enter a draft where the team only got four draft picks, and one of the reasons for that is that they made moves far too rich and put themselves out of running for compensatory picks this year. They kind of learnt from that, and also maybe possibly learnt from the Jeremy Lane decision a few years ago as well, which didn't really pay out in the way they were hoping to when they signed into a relatively chunky deal, Adam.
Yeah, and also, you know, if there's one thing that Pete Carroll is absolutely known for, it's the way he can coach up secondary guys, and no one was expecting Justin Coleman to play to the level that he did when he signed, and so I would probably imagine there's another guy they can find off the scrap heap to do just as good a job, if not better. So it's just one of those that, like, yeah, I'm not wasting much energy getting too disappointed about it.
No, and Akeem King certainly appears to front the queue to replace him, and you'd expect if they can get some draft capital from somewhere that it may be a spot they try and fill via the draft as well. The second name, I think, out the door was running back Mike Davis, who, after I think Mike Dugard's been a couple of times talking about the fact that he had the notification when he was cut by the Niners on his phone screensaver, and it kind of he carried it all the way through his time in Seattle. He finally got his relatively big payday. He signed for the Chicago Bears on a 2-year, $6 million deal, which also, as we currently talk, could land the Seahawks a late 6th or 7th round compensatory pick as well next year. But is Mike Davis getting paid is a pretty cool, a bit like Justin Coleman, is a pretty cool result of a good couple of years in Seattle for him, isn't it?
Delighted for him, and also think it's absolutely the right decision by the team. He was not anywhere near a good enough player in my eyes to warrant being paid a significant amount of money. And, you know, it's not, you know, earth-shattering, cap, salary-altering money he's got, but it's still, when you add it up at the end of the year, it's still money that could be spent elsewhere. And I think the Bears are getting a decent player on money better than his ability, but, you know, good luck to him. He was a great servant for a couple of years, did everything you could have asked of him, and another one that leaves on good terms.
Yeah, and I think with Davis, you can't pay RB $3 million over $3 million per year. Obviously, you put a lot of investment in draft capital, and with Rashard Penny, Chris Carson appears to be the lead back in Seattle as we turn the corner into 2019 season. So paying a third string winner back $3 million per year is a bit much, although some of the teams may well do that.
Presumably Jordan Howard will leave for them, and that's why they're doing this, or are they doing the same thing?
I think so. I think Jordan Howard is their head coach, can't remember his name, Matt Nagy. I think there's a lot of people in both sides of the aisle who are kind of pushing for a trade to Philadelphia Eagles, because I think that's the one position on that offense where they haven't invested in at all, really. Obviously, they've got the O-line sorted, got Lane Johnson. Obviously, they've gone and got DeSean Jackson back from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then obviously they've got the top three quarterback pick in Carson Wentz, and obviously now Nick Foles is out the picture as well there. So the one position they haven't invested in Philadelphia is the running back position. It kind of seems to be suggested that it could be a kind of like Leon Washington S deal in 2010, where it's a draft weekend deal when the draft board and where the running backs sit in the second day of the draft kind of start to fall. That could be when we see Jordan Howard leave Chicago for Philly. So yeah, I think Mike Davis will be the guy behind Tariq Cohen in Chicago next year, which is a pretty similar 1-2 to what they've got over here. What they had over here.
Yeah, Carson aside, I guess.
Yeah. Shamar Stephen then also, after one-year loan from the Minnesota Vikings, returned to the Minnesota Vikings on a 3-year deal. Like Justin Coleman and Akeem King, Shamar Stephen out, Stefan out, Puna Ford, and probable draft pick in, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it's another one of those deals that the team were never even going to come close to matching it, so it's not really worth expending any energy moaning about this one either, really.
And as with all these deals, it's another way that the team are going to probably collect, as we talk, a 2020 compensatory pick, although probably a 6th or 7th round level again. But I'm not sure how that is calculated, but that's what Over the Cap are suggesting, that it'll be a 6th or 7th round compo pick, which is, again, as we keep saying, and we'll keep saying all the way through the draft, is learning from a mistake where you went in a draft weekend with only 4 picks, Adam.
Yeah, this draft weekend is going to be ugly for us, I think. If not, you know, they might pick up, you know, 6 players, but it's going to be pretty sad just to see how low they're going to have to slide before they make their first pick, I would imagine. It wouldn't surprise me if they trade back twice and maybe not pick until 50, 60.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a pretty cool piece on the draft network by, I think, Joe Marino wrote it. It's a pretty really good website, and their mock draft simulator is amazing. Where he detailed that the 4 teams who traded out of the first round last year, all 4 of them made the playoffs last year and seemed pretty well set for 2019 as well. So it's not the end of the world. It's not the be all and end all to pick in the first round if you select and build the roster outside of that. Wow, is it, Adam?
No, and also I think even the most optimistic of Seahawk fan would suggest that making a real Super Bowl push this year might be 1 year too early. So we're probably on a 2 year rebuilding cycle. So I guess get what you can this time, keep as many compensatory picks for next year and have a real go at it then. It's a bit of a shame because we were having the same discussions last year. And actually at that point, they were probably better off placed in order to cash in on a lot of talent. And they didn't do that. But I think at some point, and I think we'll go on to this when we discuss some Seahawk players that are up for contract renewals, the roster does need a rebuild at some point. And, you have to take your medicine one way or the other. And it may just be a case that this is the offseason we have to do that.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's going to be quite an interesting offseason for a number of reasons. But one of them is how they build the roster and maybe try and build on what was, let's be honest, a surprising 2018 season for the fact of what happened and in comparison to our expectations. Anyway, also the next one to leave was probably the most disappointing one of the four we've so far mentioned. J.R. Sweezy left on a 3-year deal to Arizona. I can't find any financial stuff on it, but although it's a 2-year deal, apparently, according to SpotRack. So, yeah, 2-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals shores up that airline somewhat, but also puts a question mark on our left guard spot, which appeared would be Ethan Postich if he isn't cast away for, yet again, those much-needed 2019 draft picks, Adam. But the Sweezy, I think we kind of predicted this on the last podcast where he's done what he did the first time around. So he's kind of played solidly, if not spectacularly, and he's cashed in at the first opportunity, which can't really.
I would imagine that going into the off season, they said, we're going to get one of the two guards that we'll keep on, and it ended up being Fluker they've chosen over Sweezy. Whether they've chosen Fluker or maybe Fluker chose them in a way with the deal that he took versus what Sweezy was after, but. I don't know. I mean, he played well last year within the remit of it being J.R. Sweezy for me, but the fact that I'm still,
They still give
moderately...
They still give up 51 sacks.
Yeah, and I'm still moderately scarred from his pretty inauspicious first time round. So if maybe his performances last year put him back onto like a level pegging in my view of what he is as a player, it's not one that I can be devastated about losing because, for me, Fluker... All right, albeit as more of an injury risk, maybe is more of a tone setter. I think he has more of an impact on the mentality in the locker room. He seemed like more of a leader when we speak to people like Mike Dugar, suggesting what he does. If it was a case that was one or the other, then I think they probably made the right decision.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you. They're also leaving the Seahawks for Arizona. Probably the one which weirdly annoyed me the most because of we give up a draft pick for him is Brett Hundley signed a 1-year deal with the Cardinals to back up Josh Rosen and or Kyler Murray down in Cliff Kingsbury's kingdom. Brett, a backup quarterback is a backup quarterback, but when you give up a 6th-round pick and he doesn't even get a snap, he got a snap in preseason anyway because of the time of the trade, doesn't even take the field for your team. It's a little bit annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, when was he traded?
I think he was traded the day before the final preseason game.
It's very bizarre. I mean, if Wilson goes down, as we've said for years, you're stuffed.
Yeah.
So why would you give up capital for a backup who's not even good? It just doesn't really make any sense.
Traded a 6th-round pick, and then obviously at the end of, after the Cowboys game, they've lost Alex Magoo, who was a 7th-round pick last year, to the Jacksonville Jaguars on a futures contract, which, who knows, it could be this year with Alex Magoo and Nick Foles. They've given up 2 draft picks and have absolutely no one to show for, because without looking, do we even have a backup quarterback on the roster?
Why do I feel like there is one? I don't think there is one.
Because Austin Davis is now a coach for the Seahawks.
Yeah. Boykin is not on the roster anymore.
No, he's listed as a free agent, but I don't think that is ever going to change. I don't think they do. I'm just loading the depth chart up. Probably should have got this prep, but yeah, it's just another, like we've talked about pretty much since they started making what could be construed as questionable moves last offseason. We've kind of questioned what they were doing last offseason and preseason and building the 2018 Seahawks, and this is another example. The backup quarterback is Paxton Lynch.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah, yeah. Which,
thank you to all of those that were screaming that at your car radio whilst you're listening.
Yeah, that's how much of an impact that trade, mate. That deal. Jesus, what on earth are they doing? That backup quarterback position. It was suggested with all the Kaepernick stuff a couple of years ago that they didn't. One reason they didn't sign Kaepernick is they didn't want to make Wilson insecure. It's you can't really look at that depth. The quarterback depth since that story did the rounds and kind of it hasn't been kiboshed, really, has it?
No, I think in the same way that Tom Brady had the backup traded across the country to bring in Hoyer, I think amazingly Russell Wilson has even more job security than Tom Brady does with Brian Hoyer backing him up.
Yeah.
So well done you, Russ. Yeah, well done you.
And we'll get on to him a little bit later.
Oh yes.
On the other the big one also. Although it was not surprising, it's just a matter of when and not if. Although there was a few hours of glimmer of hope from certain aspects of Seattle media. Earl Thomas officially ended his Seahawks career, the end of the Legion of Boom era in Seattle Seahawks and Seattle sports history. His final curtain came down as he joined the Baltimore Ravens on a 4-year, $55 million deal. To replace Eric Weddle, who 12 hours before Earl Thomas signed for Baltimore, somewhat slated off and slagged off the simplicity of the Seahawks defense, and now Earl Thomas has just improved that position for what was the number one defense in the NFL last year, hasn't he?
Certainly. I mean, overriding feeling of sadness with this one, same as when Sherman left last year. I think it's been incredibly unedifying. No. I think the team dealt with it almost as poorly as they could possibly have dealt with the whole thing.
Yeah.
And to, as well as losing one of your best ever players, to lose him for nothing, I mean, maybe a compensatory pick at some point, is just a shame. And it's a horrible situation to be in, that you just lost another player for ultimately nothing. Earl Thomas seems to have signed for money as opposed to signed for the Baltimore Ravens. By the way, his first two tweets were one congratulating his money bag emoji, and the second one was to thank the Seahawks. I think it took him about 3 days to even mention the fact that he signed for the Baltimore Ravens, which is maybe more of a suggestion on the way the modern NFL is going. But yeah, with that sort of money, he was never going to be re-signed, or that maybe he should have been by the team. It's disappointing. I'm rambling. I don't really know where I'm going with this, but it's just a shit one, to be honest.
Yeah. Thomas's deal, $32 million guaranteed, and looking at the dead cap hits over the first 3 years, he definitely, unless the Baltimore Ravens suddenly get taken over by David Gettleman and decide to take a dead cap hit on every other week, it should at least work out to a 3-year, $43 million deal. So Earl Thomas, as petty as it is, but Earl Thomas being Earl Thomas, he can rightly think that he won this one, didn't he?
Well, the Seahawks didn't win.
No.
The Ravens probably haven't won, given the fact that he's had two broken legs in the last 3 years, and who knows what he's going to be like. And he probably got just under what he would have wanted last year off one broken leg. So I guess, out of the three, he's done really well. He maximised his potential for sure.
Yeah,
and you've got to be pleased for him.
Yeah, most definitely. I think he's the best. He's the best player at his position since the guy who just went in the Hall of Fame as a Baltimore Raven playing that position, since Ed Reed. I think he just definitely took that mantle on once Ed Reed kind of waned away in his early 30s, which ironically is the same age Earl Thomas is going to be when his deal is at an end in Maryland, which is quite fitting. But also with Earl Thomas, we saw last year with Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett, it's just another thing where the team kind of knew what they had, and then they've kind of used the characteristics of the guys that helped build a success against them and as reasons to get rid of them, as you say, with very little coming, swinging back around to the team in the team's favour in terms of draft capital or actual on-field success from those positions that they've lost the players in, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, who gives a shit about what I'm about to say? Because it doesn't really mean anything. But it's a shame that when you have team heroes that they leave under acrimonious circumstances, and you can't necessarily see a situation where with this head coach and this general manager, they'll get a day where they come back to the team and are greeted on, you know, on the field with their, when their numbers put in the ring of honor. And it just feels like a shame that, like, you'd have the relationship for two or three guys that would end like that. You know, yeah. If you look at how, I don't know, I mean, some players retire at their team, but let's say Willie McGinnis, the way he talks about Bill Belichick, for example, he'd like singing their praise from the rooftops. And it's just a shame, because it would have been nice to have guys like that in 10 years time. Maybe they will, but, you know, just be kind of our guys in the media that root for our team. And you just wonder if that's going to happen. And it doesn't mean anything. It's a complete intangible, but it would have been nice to kind of feel that those were permanently our guys. And it's going to suck to see him in another jersey, much as it sucks to see Sherman in the red and white.
Yeah. Cause over here with football, our football, there's not many one club players. I've obviously got the Nevilles and all that class. And then, I mean, Spurs, do they have any? I mean, Harry Kane hopefully
is currently
really probably will be for the most, but it would have been nice, especially the modern NFL era, as the cliche goes, to have more than one and have the players at positions and of the talent level that we had a couple of years ago. But obviously business is business, and they've kind of shot them out the door. And I think you talk about getting those players back in the good graces of, in however that is. Kenny Easley is in the Ring of Honor. Kenny Easley's in the Hall of Fame as a Seahawks player. If you go back and revisit how that player-team relationship ended and how things got more than acrimonious for Kenny Easley, and the fact that has kind of been smoothed over in the recent years.
It's a different world, though. It's a different world. We're in a much more social media, clickbaity, you hate or you love world, and I think there's a lot less rationalizing of situations like that than there would have been back at those times.
No, and also Kenny Easley did sue the team, though.
Interesting. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
but also on that, I do think the unlikeliest one of those kind of like upper echelon Seahawks era, LOB era players, I think Earl Thomas is the least likely one to do an about face. I just think that seems to be how he's wired. I think Sherman appears way more open to that. I think we saw that how he was greeted by most players when he came back with the Niners last year. I think Earl Thomas, of those, what, half a dozen or so, you could probably pick out who are no longer on the team are going to be the couple that are still on that team. He's probably the least likely one to, well, the easiest one to get back in the good graces of all involved, I think.
It's just a shame they didn't, you know, take the decision a year in advance of them and say, look, we're going to trade them away. Yeah. We're going to end on good terms. No one needs to have a contract fallout or whatever. But we're not there, and we're here now, and that's just the way of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think it's like the acceptance of actually what they were trying to accomplish last offseason. If Earl Thomas had been in that mix with Sherman and Bennett as well, wouldn't they? Because if you just say, right, we're getting rid of these three, we're going to give it a couple of years, although they would never have admitted that, the people in charge, the people at the four in the Seahawks would never have admitted that. It would have been an easier pill to swallow, if that's the right way to look at it. If Earl had been traded for, say, what OBJ's been traded for, similar to that, would that have been easier to swallow 12 months ago?
Well, I don't think you'd have got a first-round pick for him either way, but you probably would have got your Malik McDowell money back, your Malik McDowell trades back, if you got rid of Sherman and Thomas. And ultimately, you did get rid of both of them anyway. They played combined three games last year for the Seahawks between them, and you got nothing back for it. So it's just, hopefully all act as a lesson that, as sometimes upsetting as it can be to lose some of your stars, if it's the common thought in the building is these guys are not going to retire for our team, you probably should get rid of them at that stage.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, Earl Thomas leaves the Seahawks as a former top 20 pick, and he also leaves the Seahawks as sixth all-time for the franchise with 28 interceptions. Two of those he returned touchdowns. Four behind Richard Sherman and Kenny Easley on 32. He's 22 behind the all-time franchise leader, who is Dave Brown. He started 125 games for the Seahawks and made 479 tackles. And here is our podcast little vox pop thing for Earl Thomas before we move on to the ins and stays of the Seahawks week so far.
Pick in the 2010 NFL draft, the Seattle Seahawks select Earl Thomas, defensive back, Texas.
Hey, that's why we gotta be great. Everything you got, that's why you gotta dominate. Sometimes I think
sitting on... Newton throws and it's intercepted. Earl Thomas with his second interception in two games. Sometimes I think sitting on trains. Every step I get to, I'm clocking that game. Intercepted, picked off by Thomas. Earl Thomas with a foot race. Brown won't get him. That will be six.
Yes, sir.
After the 5-yard gain, pass upfield, and it's intercepted. Picked off by Earl Thomas. How about that?
Ladies and gentlemen, this man next to me, to my left, is a Hall of Fame player. I know he don't want to hear it. He's never going to allow anybody to take his focus away from what he's doing right now, but this man is a Hall of Fame player. And if you don't realize that, then what the hell are you watching?
So, yeah, so Earl Thomas is gone, but it wasn't the exit door, which was just being used at VMAC all on the early part of last week. People did decide and were signed on to stay. Obviously, we mentioned Hakeem King, 1 year, $2 million deal to stay. The team then tendered exclusive right free agents Brandon Jackson, Tyler Art, Shalom Luani, JD McKissick, David Moore, and Jordan Simmons. And then they tendered defensive tackle Quinton Jefferson at his original round, which is the fifth, which is could be tempting to a couple of teams because he did play well in spots last year, didn't he, Adam?
He did. So just explain to me as well, actually, what exactly does the tender mean in order to keep or get rid of a guy?
So I think, well, the exclusive right free agents are basically Seahawks for the next year on very minimal contracts, I think. Quinton Jefferson, his original round means he gets paid a predetermined level of money. And if any other team wants to sign him, they have to give up a fifth round pick and then offer him a contract for like three years, $12 million. So the Seahawks can then match that. And if they don't match that, Quinton Jefferson goes to the team and the Seahawks get a fifth round pick, I think, next year. So it'll be another 2020 pick. I think that's how it works.
Okay, I'm not with you. Half I wasn't really listening, but still, no, I don't really understand.
And then also the team tendered George Fant to a second round level, which now means on that predetermined cost level that George Fant has just signed a $3 million deal to the former basketball player, come right tackle, come blocking tight end, come 9 yards per catch, offensive weapon for the Seahawks, Adam.
I mean, he's probably going to be your swing tackle for next year, I guess.
Yeah, although Pete Carroll did mention him when talking about tight ends at the Combine and did not mention Nick Vannett in that same sentence.
Which is stupid, really, because Nick Vannett was our best tight end by a distance last year.
Yeah, I mean, if George Fant is a tight end, they need to do get rid of either Vannett or Dixon because that's a hell of a lot of money and investment in a tight end position, which is not exactly overly used in Seattle, is it?
Not really. I mean, no. You know, maybe on for 35 catches a season.
Yeah, and then obviously the big ones started to trundle in. DJ Fluka re-signed for the team, 2-year deal, $6 million, paying him $1 million, just $1 million of it guaranteed. It seems that the team is very team-friendly. And then probably the as much of a surprise, Justin Coleman leaving for the amount of money he did leave for, KJ Wright actually did stay, and it looks like he's going to end his career as one of those one-team, one-club players, Adam.
This is great for the team. It's a team-friendly deal, I think, within reason. It's not an enormous amount of money. I think we were discussing, you know, towards the 10 million mark a year. And we got, is what, 7.5 is what it's slated at being. The only worry that I have is that he has been fairly injury prone.
Yeah.
And it's going to look a terrible deal if they've done basically a Cam Chancellor two,
yeah.
Whereby they've hedged that a slightly injury hit player is going to be fine for the latter years of his career, which is against conventional wisdom.
Mm.
But you can understand why they would do that for such a team guy who didn't hold out last summer, which he would have been well within his rights to do, given how he'd played beforehand and been less injured. So hopefully this works out well, because here is a guy who absolutely deserves to be, you know, one of these one club guys and get a hero send off as a Seahawk.
Yeah, it definitely just seemed to be a deal as it's been laid out by different people that it will be revisited at the end of the 2019 season, and if he stays, its max value is $50.5 million, which, yeah, for KJ Wright is probably a pretty nice retirement chunk and a pretty nice goodwill gesture, if you want to look at it that way, from the team, because he is an important, if KJ Wright is KJ Wright of what we have for the most part of his career, he's a very important part of a defense which struggle for anything in terms of linebacker play for most of last year, outside of number 54 Bobby Wagner, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you do wonder what stopped the Niners and the Colts from approaching this. I'm just thinking of two teams yeah. that needed linebacker help, yeah. and have a shit load of money to spend.
Yeah.
They've not done it. So no. I'm interested to know what the reason is for that. Maybe KJ didn't even give him a chance, and it was always, if I get X from Seattle, I'm staying. So that could be one way to look at it. But it'll be interesting to hear the story of that one day.
Yeah, and here, talking to KJ Wright, though, KJ Wright did immediately jump on both Seattle radio sports radio stations. Hear what he said. Here is what he said on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This moment where you're kind of realizing that there's a potential, right? Mm-hmm. There's a potential that
right.
you might not be in a Seahawks uniform. What did that feel like to you, the likelihood that you could be coming back into the Seahawks after going into free agency?
Well, yeah, you know, I've been around a while and I've seen some things, and everything kind of has a look. You can kind of tell, you know, who's going to be there, who's not, you know, what direction the team's going to go in, and you kind of get a feel for things. And to be honest, I wasn't too optimistic about me returning because, you know, I was injured, and they let me get to free agency, and so I wasn't too hopeful. But thankfully that, you know, the Seahawks trusted me and wanted me a part of their organization, part of their team, and they found something to, you know, make me happy, and yeah, I'm glad that I'm staying.
I think the way he's talking, also on the team's official website, is to suggest that this is the last contract he'll sign in the NFL, go out with a decade in one city for one team at one position next to pretty much for the most part of it, apart from his first year, maybe. I think he was 2011, mm-hmm. With next to Bobby Wagner as well. Also on the linebacker core, the team re-signed Michael Kendricks to a one-year deal with a max value of $4 million, but Michael Kendricks could yet be in jail, so the get-outs of that could be fascinating to read for criminal lawyers and sport lawyers and the rest of it. But Michael Kendricks, KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner is a pretty nice 1-2-3 at linebacker position, probably as strong as it's looked since Bruce Irvin left for Oakland a few years ago, Adam.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be automatically instilled as our strongest position group in the team.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, cornerback could be, because obviously we don't know if Mark Kendricks is going to be in an orange jumpsuit, and also we don't really know what Akeem King is. I think that could be the other one, cornerback position, because obviously we've got Trey Flowers, who ceiling just seems way out of view for him currently, so that could be the other one, probably.
Maybe, yeah,
maybe running back.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Linebacker is a good shout, especially for like what you've done late, what have you done for me lately as well, with Wagner and KJ especially.
But as long as it doesn't become like a criminal, a croc, and Wagner, then we're fine. As long as the three of them can all stay on the field, yeah, then we're good. if we get to that level, you just thought that's the title for this episode now, isn't it?
Yeah. I was like, no, that's not even subtle. That's just a way to just, yeah, I'm going to shoot for this title of the episode again. Anyway, carry on.
yeah, as long as they can be on the field together, then it looks like it could be pretty good.
It does. Outside of keeping and leaving, the team did sign two outside free agents. They signed former 49ers offensive guard Mike Iupati, who's spent the last couple of years in Arizona. And also, Adam, they may have solved the kicker problem over the last few years, signing former Jets and former Seahawk, who was actually in camp last year before losing out to Sebastian Janikowski. Jason Myers has signed a 4-year deal with $7 million guaranteed, and it paid max value of just under $15.5 million. Jason Myers made the Pro Bowl as a New York Jets kicker last year. Obviously, he spent a lot of his season kicking in the wild elements of New York, Boston, and Buffalo in the awful AFC East. And also, he made a hell of a lot of the other 94%. Make percentage from 50-plus yards. On 2018 alone, it's a pretty nice investment. As I say, it's maybe settled the kicker issue the team has had the last couple of years, but there was a reason that Jason Myers was a cast-off free agent 12 months ago, Adam.
Look, if it's impossible to tell with kickers what they're going to give you. And there was a lot of consternation on the glory that is Seahawk Twitter about committing this amount of money to a kicker. But if you look at the last 3 years with Hauschka's last year, Blair Lol Walsh, and C-Lol, the amount of games that we've missed because or not won because of poor kicking is much more on like a value level than the amount of money that they've put to Jason Myers. So if it works out, it's a great deal, and I would do it every day of the week and twice on Sunday, no questions asked. But the problem is, if it doesn't work, you're going to look ridiculous. But as with all kickers, you're never really going to know that until the clutch kicks comes, because that's really what you're paying for.
Yeah, so the thing with that deal is 4 years, 50 million seems a lot, but looking at dead cap and all the rest of it, it's 2 years, £8 million, which we're going with a kicker called
dollars.
Well, I say pound, dollars.
Pounds.
Yeah. $2 million. It's not a bad deal for kicker coming off the year Jason Myers just had, is it? More?
No, and given that's like Barkevious Mingo money from last year.
Yeah,
it's not exactly the level of. Yeah, it's not the most enormous expense. We've got four guys that need paying this summer, if that. Mm-hmm. The money's there. And if it works out, then it's the best bit of business you've done for years.
Yeah. And all signs do appear to be positive, and all the reports from Jets fans and people in that building that Myers is a legit kicker. And as I said, he did make the Pro Bowl last year. So hopefully that position is sorted, and like the O-line coach, a la Tom Cable, we can stop talking about that for the next couple of years. Alan.
That would be very, very welcome.
Yeah. So with the free agency about a week into free agency now, the team, according to the internet, have Sebastian Janikowski, Deion Jordan, Nico Thorpe, Malik McDowell, strangely, Mo Alexander, TJ Green, Trevon Boykin again, strangely, and Trey Madden as still yet to be signed free agents from the 2018 roster, and there doesn't seem to be much of a market for any of them, Adam.
No, I imagine the majority of those are the ones that will end up not being in the team after week four of the preseason, you'd guess?
You'd imagine so. I think Nico Thorpe could be the one, but he just always seems to end up back here the last couple of years. I think he got paid 2 years ago and didn't really do a lot outside of being a special teams gunner. So it'd be interesting to me, that's the position you'd hope you'd be able to replace in the draft. And as we've been recording, the team are reportedly set for a visit with former 49ers and Chicago Bears, probably defensive end in the Seahawks defensive scheme, Aaron Lynch, which is a pretty interesting and typical Seahawks free agency second wave move if it happens, because I think there's a few teams looking at Lynch at this point of free agency, Adam.
Yeah, I think we're going to be one of four visits he intends to take unless he just sticks around and signs. I can't say I've got the most in-depth knowledge of this guy, so I'm not going to pretend that I do. But yeah, I mean, there was links with Jordy Nelson today coming in for a visit. So this is all pretty classic. Yes, the Seahawks offseason is taking shape in the way that the Seahawks offseason does. And for better or for worse, that's what we've got.
Yeah, and I think Jordy Nelson, I think you can always tell when a visit has the same reaction by virtually every person on Seahawks Twitter or Facebook or media member that cover the team. It all kind of got the, it's the Brandon Marshall deal 12 months on, isn't it? If he does end up signing with the Seahawks.
I think he probably has more upside than Marshall had. I think Marshall was a proper croc coming off the season he had beforehand. Yeah. Whereas Nelson, I think Nelson had like the second most catches outside DeAndre Hopkins in the last 5 weeks of the season or something.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't Andre Roberts, which is all Derek Carr seemed to see at Wembley last October.
Wasn't it Seth Roberts?
Is it Seth Roberts? Andre Roberts, wasn't it? It's Roberts.
Right, there's the Roberts check.
Okay. It might have been Seth Roberts. It was definitely Roberts, and he caught like 15 passes for like 22 yards.
Yeah. Minus 22 yards, I think it was in the end.
So he probably does have a bit more upside, but it's another position where I'd hope that the Seahawks take a late draft flyer. Someone like Antoine Wesley from NC State would be nice, but probably unlikely with this team. Obviously, we've talked a few times about what the team need to do with players who are out of contract or in next offseason, or in Frank Clark's case, on the franchise tag. And Russell Wilson decided to do the media rounds while he was on his two-day visit to the New York Yankees spring training. We'll play probably the most annoying part of that interview, because I think I've listened to it about 10 minutes before we start recording and it pissed me off. It's going to be even more annoying and more overhyped and more analysed and more magnified than we possibly expected, Adam, on this Russell Wilson contract.
Yeah. I mean, we discussed in the last podcast that Wilson's being a bit of a knob. And I think he's going to be like that during negotiations until something's done. Rob Staten's done a great article on it that I implore you all to read. And I think that expresses our, you know, views pretty well. It just seems remarkable to me that someone would want to sacrifice winning in order to make more money, especially when he is guaranteed to make probably hundreds of millions for the rest of his life. I know this isn't how sportsmen think, and you know that's probably why they're world-class sportsmen, because they have that single-mindedness and doggedness and drive. But I just cannot believe that he would want to hamstring the team like that with the money that he wants. But he's going to get it, and he probably should. So the whole thing's kind of up the swanny, really.
Yeah, he's going to get $35 million, and he doesn't currently appear to want to settle for that. Like, it's just, yeah, if you're in a bad mood, don't watch his interview on Jimmy Fallon, because it'll put you in a worse mood, because it's going to be an absolute swine of a negotiation and off-season, because, yeah, everything will be. Colin Cowherd's probably going to get a lot of work out for hot takes and get a lot of criticism, which some of it is deserved, but, yeah, I think he's going to be used as a hog roast, a hog-tied pig, I think, at this point, with getting the message across for Camp Wilson. Before we move on, since NFL season kicked off last week, as I keep saying, let's quickly dive into the bin, because I'm pretty certain we're going to agree on who to put in there this week.
First of all, this is an exciting time. for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, obviously, getting the bin this week for myself is going to be the New York Giants general manager, David Gettleman, because what are you doing, sir? They traded away one or 1A best game-breaking wide receiver talent in the league, in the Odell Beckham Jr. No matter the headaches he may give you Monday to Saturday, he can blooming deliver on Sunday, and he's the only thing keeping a lot of Giants fans going with the way their offseason's going. It's 3 days after they traded probably their best pass rusher. I can't really think of anyone else who could match Oliver Vernon moving into the 2019 season. There doesn't seem to be a long plan in place, and it seems that everything is on a 38-year-old, quite clearly finished 3 years ago, Eli Manning, Adam.
It's just the if they want to trade him, fine, like stupid, but if that's what you want to do, fine. But the worst part of it is the kind of the second wave of, well, actually their offense might function better without Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
Like, just go away. Like, Spurs fans get this with Harry Kane. We win a couple of games without him, and then Kane comes back, and despite scoring, we don't win. And some people genuinely think that maybe our team is better off without Harry Kane. And it's just people like that, just they deserve their own bin. Really, anyone that even thinks that, you belong in a bin, and a bin with like a triple padlock on it that's never allowed to be opened, because you're just talking nonsense. And the same thing happens with the Giants. You know, they signed Golden Tate, and they're like, well, like Peter Schrager's like, this might actually help their offense function better than with Odell Beckham. Just spare us. Like, we're not idiots here. We don't need the kind of self-righteousness idea that, oh, you actually know, you know, so much that this obvious thing that everyone thinks is not actually true at all. Like, it's just rubbish, and just give up, because it's so tiresome.
Yeah, and what the Giants are going to find with Eli Manning, probably you'd hope this will be his final year for the sake of Eli Manning more than anything. But with the likes of Golden Tate, you're going to have... I love Golden Tate, but he's been overpaid by the New York Giants. And the reason he's been overpaid is because it's not a... As we said with the Seahawks compared to a few years ago, it's not the preeminent destination it maybe was a couple of years ago. And it definitely isn't when you take out someone... I mean, imagine Golden Tate at his juncture in his career, leaving Detroit and getting medicine ball passes from Matthew Stafford, and then going from that to Carson Wentz and all that really nice, well-oiled offense in Philadelphia. And then you think, well, I'm going to sign for the Giants, and Odell Beckham's going to be there. They were clearly in the running pretty early for Golden Tate. And then they trade away Odell Beckham. You feel Golden Tate's agent, you turn around and go, okay, add $2 or $3 million per on that, please, because he's on a hide into nothing, isn't he? He's cashed in, which is, like with Earl Thomas, he's more than willing to do. But having Odell Beckham there, even just there on the side, it's just a ridiculous decision. And just, it's so short-sighted, and as you say, everyone kind of trying to make themselves smarter than they are. It's just, why on earth would you want to rid your team, especially in a media market like New York, want to get rid of a talent like OBJ? It's just madness.
Yeah, I think it's just completely daft, and I find it very frustrating. I mean, the Giants are not going to have a completed pass that travels more than 8 yards in the air next season.
No. If you do fancy, avoid all New York Giants players not named Saquon Barkley, and maybe avoid him for a few rounds as well, because Sterling Shepard's going to be double covered, and he's not done a lot when he's been single covered. Golden Tate is going to be Golden Tate. Evan Engram, I don't know what happened to him last year. I drafted him really early and did absolutely nothing. He's not going to do any better, because handcuffed now with an inordinate amount of dead cap money on from Vernon and Odell Beckham, who 12 months ago signed a 5-year contract. Was it 5-year? 4-year contract with the Giants. And now he's playing in Cleveland and probably going deeper in the playoffs in the next couple of years with the Browns than he ever did with the Giants.
I mean, the Browns are going to be hopefully brilliant, and I'm pleased to them. They've got 3 years to have a real go at this. You know, if they are sensible, they should try and look at this year as, you know, maybe try and get 9-10 wins on the board, and then you can have 2 years to have a real go at it. It would be probably excessively optimistic to suggest that they could turn it around and go from 0-16 to a Super Bowl winner in 2 years, which is how some of them are being, some are talking about them. So I'd probably pump the brakes on that, but it'd be great to see them be a success because they're a great team.
They're just going to be fun. That's what they're going to be. You've got Baker Mayfield feeling dangerous all season. You've got Odell Beckham. You've got David Njoku. You've got just young players, obviously, people like Njoku and Mayfield to get nowhere near max value on their contracts. Jarvis Landry, you've got defensive players, which is just a defensive front with Myles Garrett, Olivia Vernon, and Sheldon Richardson now, who signed a pretty chunky free agent 3-year deal there just before the Beckham trade. It's a proper loaded team. That team is probably going to be the number one team in a city which was all LeBron 15 months ago, which is a pretty wild turnaround for that team, and just shows what happens when you get rid of Hugh Jackson, Adam.
Yeah, who would have thought that getting rid of the worst coach ever would make you better? I'm stunned.
Yeah, anyone for your bin, or is it Gettleman and Giants for you as well?
I'm going to put in the bin, and this is purely a fan speaking, and the players, I don't begrudge you your money, you absolutely deserve it, you work bloody hard for it, and it's all good, but players like Antonio Brown and Lev Bell and maybe someone like Frank Clark in the future, who might do the same thing, that are kind of spurning their chances to win to earn a little bit more at a rubbish team, it just doesn't sit well for me particularly. I know that's how the salary cap league works. I know that's how the draft league works, that there is parity and anyone could be anyone. But Le'Veon Bell is going to be running at 2.3 yards a carry next year, getting stuffed and stuffed and stuffed, not running behind probably the best defensive line in the NFL. And he's going to find it hard, but he's going to be fine because he's going to be earning, well, actually less money than he would have got at the Steelers had he signed last year, which is a point for another time. But we discussed this via WhatsApp, and it just kind of feels to me that the league until the next CBA in 2021 is just going to hit an impasse with players wanting too much money, teams not having enough money to give them. And so the good guys are going to get spread out and just kind of lose their chance to win because they're just going to go to the highest bidder, which feels a bit of a shame.
Yeah. I'll come back on the Pittsburgh duo in a bit. But I think 12 months ago, I was saying that the next CBA is going to be an issue for the players because they're clearly going to want more of a bigger chunk of the pie. 12 months on, I think it's the other way around. The owners are going to be gnarly to deal with for the players because it definitely appears that things are swinging in the favour of player power in the age of, you said earlier, of like social media and Instagram Live and Facebook Live and Periscope and active sports agents on Twitter as well. It kind of seems to be swinging the other way towards the players. And yeah, it could be quite interesting and annoying for most fans when you get your big banner free agents that we've seen, as we may see, as you say, with Frank Clark in the next year or so. It could be quite annoying. It could be the other way around when the CBA comes back around. It could be quite an interesting negotiation, but it doesn't appear to be as stagnant as the last one did, because that's what led to this work stoppage kind of thing, because it was such a long way back to get to where they got to. But now it kind of seems that the owners are going to have to give up things they may not want to have to give up and all that. But also on the Steelers thing, I mean, I said before, Thomas, Antonio Brown won, didn't he?
Yeah, massively.
Like, he got his...
But Le'Veon Bell lost, ironically.
Yeah. Like, Antonio Brown was, for what, 6-7 weeks, his name was dragged through the mud, and then he's on a team which have paid him, kind of, to a certain extent, give him the keys to everything. And then the team he's left are kind of left with all this, was it $24 million in dead cap, which they can't spend. And then they've got Juju Smith-Schuster and James Washington as wide receivers, and Jesse James just left.
And Dante Moncrief, who they just signed.
Dante Moncrief, who had like three good months for the Colts.
Just talk to me about dead money, because I don't really understand how it works and why it works. I kind of feel like if you trade someone, they should take on the contract. I don't really get, I don't understand why that happens.
No, I don't really, to be honest. I'm looking at the dead money with the guys we've got under contract now. It doesn't really make complete sense. But I guess it's just what the guarantees they are owed. It's kind of, it's signed, the paperwork is signed in such a way where it lingers over a couple of years, I guess. But I have no clue. I just realised that Odell Beckham and Olivier Vernon and Antonio Brown, it is weighty for those teams. And Pittsburgh are going to need a new quarterback soon. And it just seems like a team which is on, from at Thanksgiving, they look like a AFC Super Bowl representative in waiting. They kind of now seem they could be second or third by quite some distance in their own division now, couldn't they?
Quarterback. Back on the original point, I wonder if maybe the CBA is going to have to change, whereby the rookie deals are going to have more money in them to kind of disincentivize people doing stuff like Bell. You know, if you've flogged yourself for 3 years of college and then 4 years in the NFL, it does stand to reason that you want to get paid heftily in your effective eighth year of professional sport. So maybe they're going to have to make it a case that when you come out of college, you know, these second and third round draft picks are going to have more money attached to their name, and just to give a bit more job security. And then when they do become good, kind of incentivize teams to stay a bit at the team that drafted them.
Yeah, and also because I mean NFL teams have the sharpest minds dealing with the money side, dealing with salary cap, dealing with things like of this nature. They've kind of figured out the rookie wage scale pretty quickly. I think we saw with the Seahawks when we made our Super Bowl run. You're seeing that to a certain extent with the Rams trying to make the most of the Jared Goff deal. I mean, outside of the Saints and the Patriots, you kind of, every Super Bowl team or contender the last couple of years is on with playing with their best offensive player or their quarterback on minimal or the smallest value contract he's going to get in his career. And it kind of seems that the league is going to have to make a move to kind of slow that down and change how teams approach, which could be something for the Seahawks to make the most of when they pay their quarterback $60 million and 50% of the team or whatever they're going to have to give. But yeah, it's going to swing back around again, but the teams have quickly sussed out a way around it this time. So it's going to be interesting to see how the league and players respond, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost spun round so much that unless your quarterback's on a rookie deal, you've kind of got limited chance now, unless you've got Tom Brady and Bill Belichick running your team.
Yeah.
Because even the Saints, yeah, they did very well on the backing of some amazing rookie deal performances. But Michael Thomas is, according to Rap Sheet, going to want in the 20s for his APY coming up with his new deal. $20 million for a receiver a year. I mean, it's untenable.
Yeah, and also that is a team which have, I think it's 82% of their cap for 2019 is going to Mr. Drew Brees.
How is that possible?
I have no earthly idea, because he restructures it every 6 months. But it just seems seems to give him more and more money. And it's what the thing with Tom Brady about restructuring his contract. Oh, he's doing it for the better of the team. No, he's not. He's getting more money for him. He's making more money off the team, and it can be spun so easily into a way that's positive for him. It's not helping the team at all, because he's getting more money. I don't understand that. And Drew Brees is making the most of that every few months, as I say. Also, talking of free agency in the second wave, the LA Rams have a visit on today with former Jacksonville quarterback Blake Bortles, because that quarterback room could not get any more mediocre. They kind of want to add to it, Adam.
It's quite a strange one. The movement of the third and fourth tier quarterback is probably as depressing a world as you can be in. At least the Dolphins are doing it right by getting Ryan Fitzpatrick, and they're going to kind of tank properly, and they'll tank by being fun.
Yeah.
And I guess Tua is very much the target for them in next year's draft.
Yeah, or Mr. Justin Herbert from the Ducks as well. Yeah.
Well, at least there's options, and it's not, you know, sucking for one person specifically, which is always a dangerous game to play.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, the draft is now just over a month away. That'll probably be the next time we convene and chat. Probably we can try and get Rob Staton back on to talk over everything which will happen in the 2019 NFL draft, not just for the league, obviously, but mainly for our Seattle Seahawks, who still currently just have 4 picks. Quick note on a former Seahawks center, Super Bowl winning center, Max Unger, announced yesterday that he's retiring. It appears that he didn't feel he could make it through the 2019 season, so he's stepped away from the game now, and the Saints have already moved to sign to sign his replacement. But the Max Unger Seahawk years are looked at through a pretty weird lens, aren't they, in the context of the Jimmy Graham trade. But Super Bowl winning player for this team, and this team's only Super Bowl, he's going to be remembered pretty fondly for probably the rest of time, isn't he?
Absolutely. I'm pretty certain he's one of those guys that will get a hero's welcome when he comes back at one day. And yeah, he was a Saint on loan, but he'll always be a Seahawk in my eyes.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can on all the usual means of social media at Seahawkers UK, UK Seattle Seahawk fans on Facebook. The podcast is available on iTunes, the Pedestrian Podcast, on Spotify, the Pedestrian Podcast. You just have to search for it quite smartly because Spotify is a gnarly mess at times. And then obviously the Pedestrian Podcast .podbean.com. Until next time, though, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast. And to sign off is that annoying soundbite from Russell Wilson's appearance a couple of days ago on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. But yeah, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
I thought you were going to call me annoying there. Go Hawks!
I heard that if your next negotiation, your next contract, there's a possibility that you will be the highest paid quarterback in the history of the league.
Yeah. Well, that's a great potential of that. We'll see what happens.
Well, how does that make you feel good? Does that mean that?
Cool? Well, you know, it's not going to make me feel bad.
Yeah.